It's time to take off your clothes, enjoy clothes-free living, and join us for Naked, Nudist, and Naturist.
Welcome to Naked, Nudist, and Naturist, the show that celebrates clothes-free living for all. I'm your host, Frank Stone.
And I'm your correspondent, Lisa Monroe, and I'll be reporting on all things within the naturist community. So it's time to get naked and join us.
And enjoy clothes-free living on Naked, Nudists, and Naturists. Well, greetings and welcome in to Naked, Nudists, and Naturists, episode 25 today. We are really glad that you were with us. We look forward to this time all week, as you know, so come on in. The water is fine. The hot tub is rocking and rolling. We have hamburgers on the grill, a stocked cooler, soft drinks, iced tea, water, yes, even beer, vegetables off to the left. Let's enjoy this next hour together as we explore the world of being naked, being a naturist, and being a nudist. On Monday of this week, December 11, Stephane Duchesne went live with his podcast to announce he's celebrating his 15th year of podcasting on naturism. So congratulations and hats off to Stephane Duchesne. Wanted to get that out there. We also have a power-packed and totally content-filled show for you today. We will have the president of AANR, Mitch London, coming up in just a moment. Of course, our weekly visit with our naturism correspondent, Lisa Monroe, and part one of my interview with the very terrific naturist fiction author, Ted Bunn. So let's kick things off right now from Texas, my interview with the very terrific Mitch London, president of AANR. So let's head over to Texas. We are going to talk to the president of AANR today. Just a brief interview. We'll have him back later in 2024 to have a full-length interview. But we want to find out what this organization is all about and why you should join AANR today. So let's bring him to the show this morning. From Texas, Mitch London. Good morning, Mitch. How are you today, sir?
Doing well. How are you?
Not bad at all. I'm guessing life as the president of AANR is just a little bit on the busy side. Is that a fair assumption?
It can be. I literally just got back a day and a half ago from Florida for the budget meeting that we have to do. Me and the budget committee get down there and we discuss the 2024 budget or the next year's budget. Where we want to spend money and how we want to spend money and how we need to cut back on spending money.
Yeah. Typical of running any business, except you're all voluntary position people, right? You're not making $10 million a year with a 401k plan and everything else like everybody, like other businesses, right?
I wish. But no, yeah, the board of trustees, all their positions are voluntary. The only people that are paid are like the executive director and the actual office staff that come in to work at the office in Kissimmee every day of, you know, the week.
How much travel does that involve for you back and forth from Texas to Florida?
Well, a lot of it depends. We typically have our annual meetings. And so I have to travel for the summer meeting, which is in August. And as does the rest of the board. And I also have to travel for the midwinter meeting, which is coming up in February. And so there I have two of those meetings, and then I have to go to Florida for the budget meeting. So at least three, and depending on the availability of the president, you know, the previous president did a lot more traveling as she was retired and was able to hit some of the other regions meetings. So Anner, Northwest, Southwest, West, whichever ones she could hit. She would go to and make a presence at those meetings. I, of course, working as a full-time employee elsewhere, I don't have the luxury of taking off unlimited time from work. So,
how does that go? Just out of curiosity, with your place of traditional work, do they know what you do? Do they embrace the naturism aspect?
They do. There's a couple that, you know, we talk about it, and then there's always one that just giggles and thinks it's the funniest thing on earth. But I've never had anybody that I've ever told anywhere a bad reaction that have said, oh my God, that's terrible. Never had that. You know, the first thing most people do when I tell them I'm a nudist is they smile. That's the best reaction, I think, is they just smile. They think it's fun or funny. And I'm like, you know, but I say it and they always have questions like, well, what about this? Is it this? And so I get a chance to explain what nudism is. I didn't instigate the conversation so they can't feel that they're threatened. It's like they're asking me the questions. Right. So I'm just answering the questions because they're going to have curious questions. They're like, oh, is it this? And I always tell them, whatever you think nudism is, it probably isn't. It's something completely different than what you probably have in your mindset, in your mind, or what you've heard.
That's a great way to put it. And I've always gotten and still get, you know, I mentioned nudist, naturist. Oh, you're one of those. You have wild parties every weekend. And then it gives me an opening to say, absolutely not. In fact, I run from those. I don't want to be a part of a wild party ever. And that's not what naturism, nudism is all about, is it?
Exactly. It's not what people think. And actually, I tell them it's not what you think, but it's a whole lot more fun because, yeah, you know, we basically do everything that most parties will have, but we just do it in the nude. You know, we have card game nights, we have board game nights, we have movie nights, we have all kinds. And of course, if you have a destination club such as a resort, such as Cypress Cove or, you know, any of those, they have a whole lot more. I mean, in Cypress Cove, I was just there for the budget meeting, as I was saying, and they have just been working on putting in new pickleball courts, of which I think their total is now 8.
Wow.
So they have like 4 or so permanent pickleball courts, and they've got pickleball courts that are tennis courts, but they can just put new nets on there and have pickleball. So, because pickleball has taken over the world. So
it absolutely has. Yeah, they're building all over the country for sure. You mentioned the world. They're also expanding beyond the U.S.?
Absolutely. Pickleball is huge everywhere. I mean, there's, like I say, besides nudist destinations, places that have tennis courts are converting to pickleball because it's the in sport now. I mean, and it's broadcast on national TV on some places. So there's tournaments, there's competitions, and it's a whole lot of fun. There's so many people that play it, and it's a real social game. Just like nudism is a very social activity, pickleball is set, so they really work well together.
Yeah, and you can get a quick workout in or a decent workout without having to take time out to chase the ball 50 feet away that your opponent hit. You can just, it's just right there, right?
It doesn't go that far. It's a little wiffle ball, basically.
Now, your personal story, as I understand it, you basically, as you were growing up, you just knew you wanted to be nude. Probably to this day, you don't know why, because I don't think your parents were nudists or naturists. Can you take us through that just a little bit when it first hit you? Like, what am I wearing clothes for? Let's get rid of these things.
Right. It was actually a delayed type of thing. I mean, as a really young kid, I was, you know, running around without clothes quite a bit, as most little boys do. We run around. We don't have clothes. This is fun. Of course, you know, that's the purity of it. It's beautiful. And then, of course, you know, puberty hits and all that, and the guilt and shame and, you know, me being overweight, you know, I was just like, ashamed and this, that, and the other. And so I just kind of crawled into that shell for a long time. And then in college over time, I had a roommate that was never there. He was always at his girlfriend's place. So I got to just be in my dorm room nude most of the time because I had a great window that had the sun that would come in the afternoons and I could just lie there. And then after that, around when I turned 40, I was just kind of like, well, what else is there? What can I do? And at the time, I was doing a number of chili cook-offs because I love cooking. Mm-hmm. And I actually happened to find, not far away from where I was living, a chili cook-off at a nudist resort. And I was like, well, hey, two things I enjoy. So let's go see if I go there. And I went and did the cook-off and met a whole bunch of people, found a club that was near me because that one was still about an hour away. You know, got to know them and, you know, they were real nice. And they also gave me some information about the local club. And so I was able to join the local club, which was a travel club. And so ever since then, I basically jumped in with both feet, as they say. So, you know, it was my quote midlife crisis thing. And I always tell people, well, nudism was cheaper than buying a Ferrari or something. So
I was going to say the same thing, except I was going to use Corvette. But yeah, it's a lot cheaper. Just take your clothes off. It's free. You can do that for free.
Well, each time I tell the story, it goes from Corvette to Ferrari. So I'm thinking next it's going to be a Bugatti or something. You know, the car gets better and better. How about that?
You might as well go all the way. What the heck?
Right.
Now, the AANR, American Association for Nude Recreation. Why should people join this in this organization, and what are some of the benefits if an individual joins?
Well, the biggest one that people are probably hearing about now are the protection of nudist rights. Mm-hmm. And right now there's a couple of instances where those have been threatened, sometimes intentionally, sometimes not intentionally. And what I mean by that is sometimes lawmakers pass laws to prevent people that are not nudists from doing things. They want, you know, like adult shops or something to not be near kids, which, okay, I get that. Right. But then they word it in poorly in their bill saying, well, we don't want naked people near children. It's like, well, wait a minute. That's going to affect us, whether you intended it to or not. Okay. And so we have a government affairs team, which daily goes through all these bills, and they have a computer program that searches every single bill in every single state that gets put in for keywords, you know, whatever those keywords are, nude, nudism, naked, you know, this, that, and the other. And they look at those bills and they try to find out, okay, are those going to affect us or are they meaning to? And if they find out that they might, then they contact the lawmaker or their staff and try to say, hey, can we get some favorable language in here or change the wording so that it's more not affecting nudists, nudism, or naturists? And so they can do that. And that is the biggest thing. And that's what we just, again, 4 days ago, our executive director went to Tallahassee and his son went with him, and they both testified before the legislature there about a particular bill. And they actually got, and it's not completely passed yet, but they got a exclusion for literally AANR, American Association for Nude Recreation, written into that bill. And to get our name into there to say these people are excluded from this, this is huge. Another great example that was not too long ago was there was a person that was accused of something, and I don't know the whole details, but he was brought before a judge saying maybe he was nude in his backyard and somebody saw. I don't recall exactly. Mm-hmm. And so he went before the judge and he told the judge, well, I'm an upstanding person. I've been a member of AANR and TNSF for, you know, 15, 20 years consecutive. And the judge basically threw out the thing because he knew that AANR and TNSF are reputable organizations and he's probably not going to be a nefarious person. So he literally just threw out the case. And
wow.
So things like that. And of course, there's other things it does. It's like if people have child custody issues, like one parent is not really into nudism and the other one is, and then they split up, they can go to AANR and they can get information that they can hand to their lawyers to help, you know, figure out, well, here's how we've done this in the past and things like that. And so there's a whole lot. And that's just on the legal end. And that is, of course, is the biggest percentage of what it does. I mean, you don't join ANR and get a toaster. You don't get a free towel. You don't get a whatever. You don't get a, you know, this, that, and the other. It's not necessarily about the material things, as we all know.
Right.
Being nudist, we don't really cling to material things.
Right.
Except maybe the Corvette or the Bugatti, whichever. Still waiting on those to happen. But, you know, it's also, you know, protecting your rights to help allow you to go to places to be nude. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've always loved to have more places that we can be nude, whether it's a beach or a club or even our own homes. I mean, there might be places that get threatened to have nudity banned in your own home. It's like, well, how am I going to take a shower? I don't know.
Yeah, you never know. Well, I'm glad you guys are out there fighting the good fight. And you're still a member of Hill Country Nudists, and you were the on the board of AANR Southwest for a while, right, before becoming president of the whole association?
I was president of AANR Southwest for 4 years. And before that, I was on the board as a board member on various committees and positions, public relations and such like that. So I kind of got talked into it, and they haven't let me go yet. So
that's a good sign. Now, if people want to get a hold of AANR, or you, how do you recommend they do that?
Well, they can certainly go to the website, AANR.com. That's the easiest. The second easiest is to probably contact the office if they have questions, which is, of course, 1-800-TRY-NUDE.
Wow.
TRYNUDE. So that worked out. And they're happy to answer any questions. They're open, I think, 5 days a week, whatever the Florida hour times are. You know, of course, if you're in California and you're calling Florida, there is a time difference.
Yeah.
So beware of that. And of course, emails, you can always email them. And my email, of course, is in the bulletin, which is the newsletter for AANR, okay, right at the beginning there, as are all the board of trustees and the region trustees and the region presidents. You know, and I always like to tell people, it's like, if you have a question, you know, contact your region president. And if that doesn't work, contact your region trustee. If that doesn't work, contact your national president. Hey, that's me. And if that doesn't work, contact the executive director. So we have lots of people that, you know, people can talk to. And we're happy to talk to it. We don't want to shy away from talking to our members because our members are what keep us going.
That's it. Well, it's been great to talk to you this morning. We've been talking to Mitch London, the president of the American Association for Nude Recreation, AANR. And Mitch, go out there and have a great clothes-free day if you can. If you have to go to a textile workplace, we understand. Otherwise, it's clothes-free for all the right reasons. And we thank you for your time today. And we'll have you on the show again a little bit down the road. So thank you very much. Have a great day.
Great. We'll see you then.
All right. Thank you. What a terrific gentleman, Mitch London, the current president of AANR. It was my pleasure to get to know him for that brief interview. And we'll have him back on the show for a full-length interview on an upcoming show or two in April of 2024. And again, you can check them out at AANR.com. You're listening to Naked Nudists and Naturists, episode 25. We thank you for being with us. Now, as you can tell by the music sneaking in on us, as is always the case, it is time for the very terrific, the one and only, our weekly correspondent on natures, and the very terrific Lisa Munro. Well, let's welcome her to the show this morning. The terrific, the one and only, the absolutely, totally unclothed, living clothes free life for all the right reasons, and smiling, terrific Lisa Munro. Good morning, Lisa. How are you today?
Good morning, Frank. I'm doing great. And you're smiling, too, and totally without clothes. So I think we're doing pretty good today.
I think we're good to go. It's hard to believe. Obviously, we're dropping this on the 16th of December, but only 9 days from today, it's Christmas. I don't know where this year went. I don't know where it's gone. You know, our first show was July 1st. It seems like 2 days ago, but this is episode 25, so we're just moving and grooving, aren't we?
We sure are. And I know it seems like it was no time since we started this, and it feels like also we've been doing it for all of our lives, so I'm not sure which it is.
That's very true. Now, before we get into the content that you and I set aside for today, I did want to give an update. Now, I don't know, a month or two ago, I mentioned I was at the dentist, and I was going to be in the chair for a while. They were going to be doing some work, so I took my phone and my headphones and put the headphones on and fired up one of our episodes, you know, that begins with you. It's time to take off your clothes. In retrospect, I think I forgot to put the headphones on. I think I forgot to turn the switch on. So they were on my head, mm-hmm. but the switch wasn't on. So when I hit the phone, I hit play, it just blasted throughout the whole place. It's time to take off your clothes. And I shoot. So I quickly grabbed it, turned it down, hit stop. Got the headphones, and I wasn't sure if anybody heard. Behind me are the doors, are the doorways to the hallway. There are no actual doors, just doorway openings. And it's a big place, so I thought, it's possible everybody heard this. It's possible nobody did. Was there somebody behind me? I don't know. Well, I forgot to give you the update. This is for our listeners, too, just to show you what can happen if you're not careful in life. The next time that I went to the dentist, I had my headphones, I had my phone, and the dentist came in. She goes, oh, you're going to listen to your phone again, I see. And I said, yeah, I hope it's okay. She goes, yeah, that's totally fine. She goes, and then she said, I'm just curious, what are you going to listen to today? And she gave me that look like, yeah, she knew. She knew. And I said, well, I think I'll listen to a sports show today or something about the news. She goes, yeah, yeah, sure you will. Anyway, what I'm going to do...
Oh, no, that's hilarious and slightly embarrassing.
Oh, very embarrassing. Yeah, I don't. She has obviously a very good sense of humor. She's just one of those people who are full of life. And it sounds like she got a kick out of it. Now, I'm guessing it was the talk of the office. They have a lot. It's a big place. They might have 20 employees working there, plus the office staff. And it was probably the talk of the town for a week or two. Did you hear Frank? Yeah, he's listening to some naked show, some chick.
Yeah, and Frank's coming back in, so let's see what he's going to listen to now. I love it.
It shows you always have to be careful. You never know who's listening, right?
This is very true, and you know that this is obviously a way to break the ice. We've talked about those ways to break the ice. So maybe she was waiting for you to say, "I'm listening to a naturism show," and she, you know, who knows?
I don't know if they have a freezer there with ice in it, but I guarantee you, I broke every ice cube in the place with that.
I bet. I love it. That's hilarious.
Oh my goodness. Anyway, that's our little update, and be going back to the dentist one more time before the year ends. And I will be really careful, as I was on visit to, turn the headphones on first, Frank, and yes. Then put them on. Okay.
Yes. Now, you've learned your lesson well.
That's right. I did want to mention a quote I found from Johnny Carson, of all people. A couple of them. I remember I was a big fan of Johnny Carson. Hardly missed a show, even though a school-age kid and stayed up way too late. But, you know, it's fun and funny, and my parents allowed it. But I remember he talked about nude bowling. Nude bowling was a new thing. And he goes, yeah, it goes the bowling alley down the street. He goes, every Saturday night, it's nude bowling. And he said, yeah, I went there the other night, in fact. He goes, I did really well. He goes, I got a couple of strikes, a couple of spares. And of course, everybody's laughing. You know, he totally dismissed the nude part. He just kind of threw that in. But that was my first inkling of that. And I was probably middle school, high school at the oldest. I think middle school, like, they do nude bowling? And the answer is yes, they do. And they still do. They have, I saw something on Twitter. Some group was advertising a nude bowling night, and it's already sold out, like, months in advance. They just, people flock to it. Which is part of why we're doing this show. People flock to this. They just can't get enough of the information that's out there. But Carson also had a quote. He said, happiness is sitting down to watch some slides of your neighbor's vacation and finding out that he spent 2 weeks in a nudist colony. Well, that's pretty good.
Now, that's pretty funny. I mean, we've all been there where we've gone to someone's house and they've drug out the slides. So that would be hilarious.
Yeah, here we are looking at a statue. Here we are 2 seconds later looking at the same statue. It's like, can I get out of here? But slides of a nudist resort might not be a bad way to spend an hour or two.
It might not be, and also another good way to break that ice. So
that's right.
Or get rid of company. I'm not sure which.
Either one. Now, you had something you wanted to go over as well.
Well, it's just something really cute that I found. It's kind of funny. There's a Judge John Hodgman on Going Nude at 87. And apparently it's some sort of little advice column that he does. And this was back in the spring of 23. But it's really cute. He said, Dan, in quotes, writes, last year the Times offered advice about going naked. I gave it a try. I found myself acceptance and joy in my body, but my wife says that 87 is too old for this. She exiled me to my room. Please tell her to let me out of my room in the nude. Call me Dan if you print this. So the judge responds this way. I'll call you Dan if that's how you get your kicks. And I stand by the papers reporting that a little everyday nudity can help us feel comfortable in our bodies. I'm writing this naked right now from my desk on the Times nude floor. Both of those were lies. I am not as nude as you, but if I were, it would obviously be in a place of privacy or community consent. Is your wife wrong to shame you? Absolutely. Are you too old? No. And then he says, wait, is she keeping you prisoner in your room? That's illegal. But is she allowed to set boundaries to reflect her own comfort? Yes, Dan, she is. End of his advice. But I really thought that was hilarious. And I had this vision of the New York Times nude floor. Why not?
Right. Well, I think they should. Last time I was in New York, it's been quite a while, 8-9 years or so. I was in a hotel and I was looking out the window one morning, like 7 or 8 in the morning. It was summertime, so it was already sunny. And across the street, I forgot what street I was on. You know, every street is a busy street around there. So it was one of the main thoroughfares. It's the street Columbia University is on. I should know that, but I just can't remember. I'm just looking out the window, and across the street was a hotel or a condo, whatever they call them, apartments in New York City. And I saw these curtains slung wide open. You know, half of them went to the left, half of them went to the right. And this woman was standing in the window fully nude. Now, I could only see, well, I guess she was fully nude. I could see from the waist up. Just looking out, overlooking the city, like, oh, I see the traffic out there and the vendors, whatever. And I thought, maybe I need to move to New York City. Maybe they have a better understanding of what naturism is all about. Just open the drapes and take in the sunshine, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the freedom to be able to do that with no one getting angry or whatever. It's just really cool. Yeah. Or no one calling the cops on you immediately or anything. Yeah. Now try that in a small town. Yeah. And you'd be the talk of the town, but you'd also have the sheriff calling probably. So.
Yeah, I keep hoping one day we'll get there, and maybe we will. It's still a long way to go where people just, you know, hi, Frank, nice to see you today. And I happen to be nude, and they're not, or they are. It'd be better if they are, like the whole neighborhood. And I know they have neighborhoods like that. I think there's one in Florida somewhere. The whole association, you know, gated community, everybody, well, everybody can be nude. It's basically a nudist naturist subdivision. You've heard of that, right?
Yes, I have, actually. Yeah. In fact, I think they were subject of a show that was on Netflix a couple years ago. Okay. They showed a group of people. I think they're associated with some sort of a nudist resort. Okay. And it's either attached to that or close to it. And they were just happy as a lark, just walking around, going about their daily business. No one cared. No one, you know, had any worries about it. But I don't know.
Yeah. And I know there are some people who physically live at nudist mm-hmm. resorts, and that is their home. They bought a home within the resort and they're allowed to live there 12 months a year. That's also not a bad way to go because it just cuts out all the junk. I can wake up, I can do my thing and be myself, and life is good, right?
I agree. But unfortunately, we seem to be regressing in some ways as opposed to becoming more enlightened.
That's part of why we are here. And we do want to talk a little bit about, obviously, this is episode 25. I say 25 out of 10 million because we're going to be here forever. But the listenership, we don't give numbers here for a variety of reasons, but the listenership is way up. You know, we're heard around the world. We get emails and direct messages from countries don't even know how to spell, might not have even have heard them before, but we're really, we've really, I don't want to say touched a nerve. Maybe we've just touched hearts because people, I think, this is my own deal. I haven't talked to a psychiatrist about this, but we're born nude and we have a desire to return to that. It's shoved aside and squelched by society, but there's an internal, I want to get my clothes off, not at the conscious level, but at the subconscious level. And we've talked about that before, haven't we?
We have. And you know, it amazes me to see some of the comments that we get from people, because it's not just, oh, great show, we had fun, that was a funny part, that was a great part. It's that they suddenly start to open up about what their circumstances are and how what we said impacted them, or what a guest has said has impacted them. Not just us, it's the people that we also have on this show that are making a difference in how people perceive their own relationship with naturism. And I think that's an amazing thing to have happen.
Well, it is. And I deal with some people in the naturism world who email or text or DM, whatever you call it. And I feel like I know them personally. They might live 5,000 miles away, 10,000 miles away, but I feel like I know them. And Jennifer, you know, our assistant here, she communicates with a number of people as well. And she has made the same comment. I feel like these are my best friends. And she's never met them. You know, they're in other countries, other states throughout the USA.
I think that's the beauty of being of the internet. I mean, it has a lot of problems in this form of communication. But the fact that we can connect with people who have similar interests and similar attitudes, then when you have that common ground, then you can start to build on a relationship. So there are some really strong feelings of connection with people. And I think it's just great.
Well, this seems to touch on a deeper level, though. You know, I have connections with people in sports, in news, in education, and parenting, and they're decent connections. But the connections we've made through naturism just seem much deeper at the emotional level. And I think you found the same thing, right?
I agree. I really do. And I think there's some people here whose stories have really been touching and, you know, some worrisome in the fact that they're struggling with what's happening to them. In some ways, we can't do a lot to help, but in some ways, we certainly can. And at least they know we're here and we all have the same struggles. You know, I can't walk out my front door naked.
Right.
I can walk in the studio naked because it's accepted.
Right.
And that, and so it's that level of acceptance. And when you feel like you're being chastised or restricted on what you want to do, then that sets up a level of anxiety. And we need to get people past that anxiety from when they can't be a naturist and just kind of keep that attitude with you at all times, whether you're in textiles or not.
Yeah. Well, that's a big reason why we will be here the Christmas weekend and the New Year's weekend. We had planned to take both of those weeks off to relax and get away from things and recharge the battery. But, you know, we found out a lot of people, a lot of our listeners, they are alone at the holidays. They live 1,000 miles away from the nearest relative, or their friends are out of town. And that's why we're doing shows 2 days before Christmas and 2 days before New Year's Day, is because of the connection. You know, they consider us to be friends. So the last thing friends should do is say, We're not going to be with you on the holidays, but we will be with our people on the holidays, won't we?
And I think it's very important, because sometimes it's just the voice that you know.
Yeah.
On, you know, when you're not feeling like you're where you want to be. So something that's very comforting, but I think it's just that familiar voice, and that's sometimes enough to, and it's something to look forward to. Oh, it's a new show today. I'll listen. You know, I have time to listen today. So,
yeah. And that's what we hear a lot. You know, people enjoy listening to us because they feel that we are friends. They feel that we are on their side, and we are. You know, we never shock our listeners. We never throw something in off the beaten path. We're just who we are. We're naturists. We enjoy close-free living for the right reasons, and we promote it. We discuss it. And people who are out there in the world of naturism love the show, but even people who are, lack of a better term, closet naturists, or they have to keep it hidden from people even in close to the people to whom they're close in their own lives, they're loving the show as well. So we appreciate everybody who listens.
Absolutely. And it helps, I think, to validate how people feel. And sometimes validation is the best we can hope for in certain circumstances. So, you know, and as long as you're enjoying it, having fun, learning something, you know, it's a great thing. And I'm having fun, so I hope they are.
Absolutely. Well, Lisa, it's always great to have you here as we gear up for the Christmas show next week and then the New Year's show after that. Do us a favor this last week before Christmas. Promise to smile all week and stay clothes-free all week. Is that a deal?
Yes, sir. That's a deal. If you do the same.
Well, you know I would. There's no
question. Never have to worry about Frank. That's right. If possible, the clothes are off. Trust me.
That's right. All right. Lisa Monroe, thank you for everything. Have a great week, a clothes-free week. We'll see you next time.
All right, sir. Take care. Bye, Frank.
Bye. A very terrific Lisa Monroe. We appreciate her, and we appreciate all of her time, and we absolutely love having her on this show. A true ray of sunshine she brings to the studio, and we thank Lisa Monroe for all of her time today. You are listening to Naked Nudist and Naturist, episode 25. We thank you for being with us. And don't forget, we're going to be with you next weekend, 2 days before Christmas, and the weekend after that, 2 days before New Year's Day. You will not be alone during the holiday season. Well, let's get to part one now of my interview with the very terrific, highly prolific author now living in France, Ted Bunn. Not only does he have 60-some books out there, but he works with Will Forrest and Paul Z. Walker to turn out their anthologies. And Ted and his wife own a naturist resort in France. So let's get to it right now. Part one of my interview with naturist fiction author Ted Bunn. On the other end of our line this morning is a terrific gentleman currently living in France, born and raised in England, moved to France, and actually owned his own naturist resort with his wife. We'll talk about that during the interview today. But he's also a rather prolific writer slash author, has a whole bunch of books out there, most of them on naturist fiction. If you're a naturist, you probably already know the name. You've probably already read a book or 60 of his. And we want to talk to him about all of that and how he found naturism and just the good life, living clothes-free for all of the right reasons. So let's welcome to the show the terrific Ted Bunn. Good morning, Ted. How are you today?
Good morning, Frank. I'm in the pink, as they say around here. It's at BM.
That's right. How is the naturist life in the country of France? Pretty reasonable? Can you just be nude whenever you want to? Or how does that work over there?
Not quite. The rules are actually stricter than they are in Britain. Oh. But very few people complain, so they get very little enforcement.
Okay.
Plenty of naturist beaches, plenty of open space where you can be naked.
I remember, you know, when I was a kid, which I like to tell people is about 150 years ago, we'd hear about the topless beaches in the south of France. And that's the first time I heard about that anywhere in the world. Was France originally a leader of the nudism, naturism movement and backed off a little, or what do you think?
Well, after Germany launched FKK, the first resorts were actually in France, along the Atlantic coast, and also on an island in the Mediterranean that the French owned. So naturism's part of the tourism industry and has been for a very long time. The topless beaches of Saint-Tropez and Brigitte Bardot, legend, of course. But you know, sort of the French rules were always only in private.
Okay.
And public nudity is officially frowned on, apart from in designated areas and tolerated beaches.
Okay, but there are enough of those designated areas to go around. I mean, you don't have to search long and hard. They're basically reasonably close to most people.
Or? Reasonably close to somewhere where you can be naked is a matter of probably 50 miles in any direction, even at the most isolated places where you can probably be naked anyway because there's nobody to see you.
Right. That's true. Now, in the country of France, where are you? Are you central, north, south, east, west? Where are you at?
We're in the south, fairly close to the Spanish border, fairly close to the Mediterranean.
Okay. So generally fairly warm most of the year, but gets a little chilly during the winter, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so.
And that's maybe that's not the best time to go outside clothes free, right? When it's 0 degrees, or I'm going by Fahrenheit, of course.
Zero Fahrenheit, certainly not. I've experienced anything like that once, and that was in Indianapolis last Christmas. But zero centigrade, freezing point, 32°F, occurs probably twice a year in this area overnight. Days are normally in the low tens, even if it's the middle of winter.
Okay, well, that's not too bad then. No. So let's get into how you found all of this. So we do want to talk about your resort. We're definitely going to talk about your books and the various various series you have going on, as well as the anthologies you're participating in and leading and running. But let's get into the whole naturism thing first. How did you find this? Did you grow up as a nudist naturist? Did you discover it later? Just tell us, take us through that story.
Well, the very first naked experience I can remember, we were at mixed scout camp, boys and girls, and we went for a skinny dip in the river the last night of the camp, encouraged by the leader.
Oh, okay, good.
So there were about 10 of us older boys, the leader, and 5 girls present at the time, and we went for a swim in the river. The fishermen on the other side all got very excited and started pumping their lanterns to make them brighter. Yeah, that was the first. One of the women eventually became my wife, but that's a very, very long story. We could get very complicated about that one.
Okay.
After that, it probably went on the back burner, one or two naked sunbathing in my parents' garden sort of sessions, until we get to 2004. When my wife and I took our first holiday to the island of Menorca, one of the Spanish islands in the Mediterranean, and we abandoned the children and went off to the monastery, which wasn't the monastery, it was actually the nude beach, sort of dared each other into going to this nude beach. So we did, and hasn't been the same since.
It sounds like it. Well, when you went for this skinny dip thing during that camp, did it do anything for you? Did you realize, hey, this is a pretty good deal. Hopefully I can do it again. Or did you literally just put it on the back burner, like you said, and it just popped up years later?
It was something enjoyable, you know, wasn't life changing.
Okay.
But, you know, sort of, it ticked along in the background. As I say, always happy to get a chance. My parents were away to go and sunbathe in the back garden.
Okay.
They had a big sheltered garden that was useful.
Now, were they not, did they not approve of this? Could you do that while they were there, or they did have to be gone?
They didn't approve of it at that stage, simply because they weren't there.
Right.
They knew nothing about it.
No.
We'll come back to them later.
Yeah, but had they been in the home, would you have done that, or did you do it? Or?
No. Didn't do it when they were at home.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, then at some point after 2004, between then and now, you got into writing naturist fiction. And as I understand it, we talked a little bit off air before we started the interview. You did not grow up as a writer. You didn't go to college to be a writer. So how in the world did it come to be that Ted Bunn is a highly prolific writer, not only of books, but of naturist fiction books?
It really came down to having a job where I spent a lot of time in the car, arrived at customers' houses or places of business, couldn't actually hear the end of a play or a story being told on the radio. So on the way home, when we got stuck in a traffic jam on the London Orbital Motorway, the M25, which is famous for its traffic jams, I would make up the endings of the stories I'd half heard.
Okay.
And one of those stories eventually translated itself into The Uncovered Policeman one afternoon while I was lying by the pool here at L'Olivet.
Okay. Now, you spent a lot of years in IT, which is, you know, highly technical field, not necessarily a creative field, although it could be. There's a lot of creativity involved in that field. But when did you find out you're a creative person, creative enough to make up stories and to write books?
That's a totally different time.
Yeah, okay.
I used to play in a blues band, just a local pub one, and I used to do the publicity for it. So I actually wrote an entire fictitious piece for the local paper about the blues having originated in the county of Kent, where the hop pickers indulged in the big, repetitive, hard-working jobs and created songs that with rhythmic patterns that repeated to keep themselves focused on the job. And the Navy sailors, Chatham Dockyard, learnt these songs.
Okay.
And on the long transatlantic crossings, when they had the slaves in the hold, the sailors would be singing these songs, the Navy blues, as they called them.
Mm-hmm.
And from the Navy blues, the Negro slaves learnt the blues.
Ah,
okay. That's pretty imaginative.
Yeah.
And caught the attention of the local paper as it was intended to.
Yeah.
But that was my first item that was ever published.
All right. Well, that's very good. Oh, by the way, what instrument did you play in this band?
I am a rhythm guitarist.
All right. Do you still play?
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
Hmm.
I don't know if you know this. I grew up as a musician as well. That's my first 2 degrees in college were in music. Kind of serious about it. So when somebody tells me they're a musician, it kind of gets my attention. So maybe if you ever get to the U.S., we'll have a little jam session, Ted. How's that sound?
We will do that.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. So at some point you turned to the world of writing naturist fiction. Do you remember about what year that was that you started writing this book?
That would have been the winter of 2015.
Okay. Oh, fairly recently then.
Yeah.
And then once you got going, you basically decided to not stop. Because I think you told me Amazon has 64 books with your name on. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
A couple of them are collections of short stories that are available as short stories. So it's probably about 50 different stories.
Well, that's not bad at all. Well, why don't you just take us through the first book then, called The Uncovered Policeman, the first book that you wrote, but also the first book in the Rags to Riches series. What in the world is this book all about?
The Uncovered Policeman starts with a call to the policeman, a young cop, recently employed, and he has to go and attend to a burglary that the dispatcher says, you're not going to like very much. It's at a nudist colony, nudist camp. So he trundles off there and, rather embarrassed, starts his investigation and bumps into a young lady who is there studying for her exams. And that's Beatrice.
Okay.
And she's the main character, actually, rather than the policeman, but that was an accident that happened later.
Yeah.
And they start to form a relationship that eventually leads to the uncovered policeman becoming a naturist.
All right.
And to conceal his identity from the world at large, B christens him Rags.
Okay.
So we end up with Rags and B and Rags to Riches, because eventually, the end of book four, he's living in France, he's married and expecting his first child, and he decides he's the richest man in the world.
Wow. Now, is he the central character in every book in this particular Rags to Riches series?
In the Rags to Riches series, it's him, yes. Yeah, P.C. Addiscombe, better known as B, features in all 12 books.
Yeah. All right, so 12 books in this series. Are you done with the series? Do you have more to go? What are you looking at?
The series is finished.
Okay.
I declared it finished. I've decided to leave Rags alone in peace to get on with the rest of his life.
Yeah.
But, as I said, there are millions of stories of the people who met Rags and B over the years that they were active as naturists. And some of those stories reappear. I mean, sort of a recently added one about a bridesmaid that attended their wedding. It's a short book, but the bridesmaid's tale is there.
Yeah, all right, very good. Have you ever talked to a police officer who is a naturist slash nudist and what they go through in terms of protecting their identity? Because I would imagine that if that gets out or if their bosses knew, there could be some issues. Have you ever talked to a police officer about that?
We've had a couple who visited here at the Olivet and at the previous place I was running in Portugal.
Yeah. What did they say about that? Were they concerned? Was it something, oh, well, if somebody finds out, no big deal, but I'll try to do what I can? Or what were their thoughts?
They do try to keep it private.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I think the main thing is that there is nothing, they're not doing anything illegal, and it's their mates teasing is more likely to be a trouble than the bosses.
Right. Yeah, I think that would be the issue, you know, especially the old, of course, there are women police officers too, but just talking about the men police officers, boys will be boys. And, you know,
and the locker room's the locker room.
Yeah, exactly. Like, hey, naked guy, let's go on a burglar run. Well, that's just, you know, at some point it gets old.
Yeah.
You don't want to hear it anymore.
That's it.
Yeah. What was your next series? You had Rags to Riches. You said you had 12 books in that right now?
Yeah. 12 books in that and half a dozen short stories and two spin-off novels.
And then what's your next series after that?
Well, that sort of coincided with it. I wrote a series of three books about a couple who retired and moved to France and suddenly discover that they're naturists. That's the New House series. So we've got New House, New Neighbours, New House, New Address, New House, New Traditions.
Yeah.
Also known as almost a year in Occitane.
Okay.
Which is after the more, slightly more famous series, A Year in Provence.
All right. Looking at that series right now, so what do people go through? Or have people told you this before? Maybe you've gone through it yourself. You're a naturist. You love to be nude. You buy a new house in a new neighborhood. What do? Do you check the lay of the land? Do you put up screens or a fence? What do you do?
We made it part of the buying criteria. The property had to be sufficiently private for naturism.
Okay. Sufficiently private as you bought it or?
As we bought it. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the ability to screen off the neighbors was a secondary consideration if you couldn't meet the first one.
Right, yeah. But if you found the perfect house in the perfect neighborhood, but it wasn't private enough, you still left room for the capability of making it private enough.
Yeah, if you could screen it, it could be done.
Have you ever heard the reverse, where somebody who's not a nudist or a naturist, they just have clothes on every single day, every hour of every single day, and then a naturist moves in next door? Have you heard how they react?
No. Dreadfully blunt to me, but no, I haven't heard anything about it.
Yeah. I can't imagine what that would be like because I'm not, a textile person, so I can't put myself in their head, but I'm living, every day with blue jeans and a sweatshirt on or a suit and tie, and then these naked people move in. It's like, what in the world's going on? What's happened to the neighborhood here? I guess might be their initial thought.
Right? I've got no idea. I mean, sort of, there are people in the village here in France that know that we're naturists.
Yeah.
And quite a number of them have said, oh, so are we.
Oh, good.
We used to be.
Yeah.
We discovered that 5 couples locally were all members of the Merry Hill Naturist Club when it existed in England.
Oh, wow. And now they're all living in France, reasonably close to you.
Yeah, within a 10-mile radius.
Well, that's not bad at all. Yeah. And that happens a lot, doesn't it? When you put it out there, oh, by the way, I'm a naturist nudist. Oh. You find other people, well, so am I. And then before you know it, you've made instant friends.
Mm. Oh, yeah, very easily.
Have you noticed that? Because I've certainly noticed it, and I know other people have as well, but asking you, it's easier to make friends in the naturism community. They just seem friendlier, more open than people who wear clothes. That's a general statement, but in general, have you seen that as well?
I've seen that very frequently. I mean, as British naturism say, naturists, people with nothing to hide.
Yeah, well, that's true. And some people take that at face value. Yeah, they're showing their whole body. They're not hiding their body. But the expression means a lot more than that, doesn't it? It means you as a person, your body, soul, emotions, everything, doesn't it?
Mm, yeah, very much so.
Yeah, that's what I've noticed, too, that I've told this story before, walking on a textile beach, if you get, as I, a man, if I get within 20 or 30 feet of a couple of women in bikinis, they'll look at me suspiciously. Like, what are you doing so close to us? You loser, get out of here.
Yeah.
If I'm walking in a naturist beach and I get within 5 feet of naked women or men and men, they say, hey, come on over, have a drink with us. We have an extra sandwich in the cooler if you want it.
Yeah.
It just seems to be that polar opposite in terms of naturism and people who wear clothes all the time, at least to me. Sounds like you found that to be the case.
Very much so. Yeah. And both the French and the Portuguese, which is the main areas I've been naked in, is they are very gregarious people.
Yeah.
They end up with huge bundles of naked people sitting around sharing sandwiches, drinks, laughing, joking, and having a whale of a time.
Yeah, and that's the way it should be. You know, I was in, speaking of music and speaking of Portugal, I was invited to perform there, gosh, it must be at least 20 years ago, in an annual jazz festival. And I couldn't do it because of obligations here in the U.S. But what's the whole naturism, nudism thing over in Portugal? Are they a little freer than France or about the same or what?
It's about the same as in France. I mean, it's less established. Mm-hmm. You know, and they don't have the huge nudist resorts that France has.
Okay.
You know, France for Naturism runs 5-6 sites as an organization, and they probably can accommodate upwards of 100,000 people when full.
Okay.
In Portugal, it's much smaller than that, much more individual. Plenty of beaches, very relaxed attitude. It's a nice place to be. The only problem is Portuguese is one hell of a language to try and learn from English.
That's true. I have a guy who comes to my home every once in a while, and I don't like to see him because he charges a lot of money for his service. He's a grandfather clock repairman.
Ah.
And he can barely speak English. So he brings his wife with him who speaks perfect English and perfect Portuguese. And I didn't know what the language was, but at one point I said, you know, just out of curiosity, where are you from? Oh, Portugal. And he learned his trade there, and he came over here at some point and is making a very good living because he's great at what he does. But I took Spanish and even taught Spanish for a little bit. But it's a little bit different than Portuguese, or Portuguese is a little different than Spanish, isn't it?
Mm. They make a point of it.
Yeah.
Just to prove that they are different to the Spanish, I think.
That's right.
But I had an assistant who worked with me in Portugal briefly. Who had learnt Spanish, he was Irish, he'd gone to Argentina as part of the peace process in Ireland and learnt Spanish. So he came back and was wandering around Europe, taking casual jobs. And he discovered that if he went down to the bakery in the village where we were in Portugal and spoke slangy style Spanish, Portuguese understood.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
it does seem like, and I haven't made a major study of this, but it seems like every single word in Portuguese is slightly different than every single word in Spanish. Just enough nuances that people can tell you don't know what you're talking about at all. If you're trying to speak Spanish, you just kind of look like a fool to them. But all right, let's move on with your books. We're talking to naturist fiction author Ted Bunn, living in France now with his naturist resort. We'll still talk about. So we've talked about Rags to Riches. We've talked about A New House. Those are two different series. 12 books in one, 3 in the other. How about another series? You have a whole bunch. Which one you talk about?
There are two other series. Crook and Lock.
Yeah.
Which is set back in the 1970s, Britain. Mick Crook is a motorcycling computer repairman. Oh, and games machine repairman. And his partner, Sam, is a policewoman, or was a policewoman by the time we get to the fourth book. And they wander around solving crimes and generally enjoying life without their clothes on.
Well, and that's basically the way to live, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. By my notes here, you have 4 books in that series. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. They're a little bit grittier than the others, in that there is a certain amount of violence occurs and falling off motorbikes or being knocked off motorbikes and bouncing along the motorway sort of stuff.
Yeah, generally when you bounce your head off the pavement, the pavement tends to win most of those contests, doesn't it?
I survived 3 of them.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, then I gave up motorbiking.
Yeah, I was going to say, there comes a point where, the bike and the pavement are winning too many of these battles. I better sell the bike. Now I have a series here called NBL Solutions. Is that part of the nature?
NBL. This is a female character, Melody, who decided that after her husband died, She no longer wanted to be owned by a man. So she stopped being Melody Fabricant, as her husband had been, and her father's name before that. Again, she didn't want to go back to being Melody Carpenter. So she decided to reinvent herself. And on the beach in Kefalonia, a group of other people who sort of she interacts with have been describing her as the Naked Beach Lady.
Okay.
So she became Melody, the Naked Beach Lady, or NBL for short.
You have a pretty good sense of humor as well, don't you, Ted?
I try to. So Melody, the NBL, solves people's problems.
Yeah.
And, there can be personal problems, business problems, because she's a blindingly bright woman.
Mm-hmm.
She would have gone immense distances in any career, except for the fact that she can't think straight when she's got clothes on.
Yeah, well, there you go. Like us. That's exactly right. Does your sense of humor make its way into your books a lot, at least occasionally, I hope?
Most of them contain big chunks of humor, yeah.
Yeah, big chunks of the Ted Bunn specialized humor, right?
Yeah, it's the only one I can use.
Which you find to be funny, but the big question is, does your wife find you to be a humorous guy as well?
Most of the time. Apart from when I start quoting Monty Python, she doesn't like that.
She's out the back door. Now, we have some other, there's another series here. Maybe it's not a naturist series, but Music, The Food of Love. That's not a naturist series? Or?
Oh, again, that's naturist. I forgot about that one.
good.
Central character in that one is another lady called Juliet, who's a lawyer. Don't know what the American equivalent is. She's a solicitor in the UK. She doesn't actually work in court. She ends up having a relationship with her new boss's, her new boss, David, important, has a son, and she gets involved with him because she falls into the pool laughing at his announcement that his name is Harley.
Okay.
He's Harley, David's son. And yes, they do turn out to be naturists and get themselves a place where they can be naked and make money. And she carries on going into the office in her suit and soliciting.
Okay.
I didn't mean that, did I?
Yeah, I know. I knew what you meant. It's okay. So it's Harley, David's son.
Yeah. Harley is David's son.
Yeah. Your sense of humor is about as dry and drop dead hilarious as mine. I find myself to be drop dead funny. So Ted, you're a drop dead funny guy, at least to me.
Thank you.
We might be the only two who think that about each other, but that's okay. At least.
Just to sort of complete the circle, Harley and Juliet actually go and stay with Rags and Bee.
Okay.
And become firm friends of them.
Wow, very good. Yeah. So you're tying your different series together. I like that.
Yeah. Even in New House, the late female character is reading a story about a policeman who ends up in a naturist camp. So again, Rags to Riches comes in.
That's right.
These things tied together.
A very terrific naturist fiction author. He writes other books as well, and he and his wife own a naturist resort in France, Ted Bunn. And we will have part two of my interview with the very terrific, highly prolific Ted Bunn on next week's show. Don't forget, we will be here next Saturday. The day before Christmas Eve, we'll be with you. The day before New Year's Eve, we will be with you as well with brand new shows. You are not alone during the holidays. We invite you to step in, join us, and go along for the journey on Naked, Nudist, and Naturist. We just enjoy this time together, and we hope that you do too, as we are in this journey together. Well, thank you for being with us today on Naked, Nudist, and Naturist, episode 25 today. We give you a brand new show every Saturday morning at 6 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time. Continue to join us. Check us out on our website, nakednudistandnaturist.com, Spotify, Google, Amazon/Audible, Apple Podcasts, and also on Twitter. You can write us anywhere, anytime, any place. And we thank you for being with us today. Plan to join us for every single one of our shows here, and have your clothes off when you're listening. We have our clothes off when we're broadcasting, enjoying the naturist life.
We celebrate clothes-free living for all. Remember to enjoy being naked and join us again for Naked, Nudist, and Naturist.
We drop a brand new show every Saturday morning, so come back and join us. Have your clothes off when you do for Naked, Nudist, and Naturist. Have a great clothes-free day.